Our topic of discussion today is when nationalism becomes negative. What happens when we misunderstand it or misinterpret it? And we're going to delve in this segment into this discussion about the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag, which many are saying today is an act of idolatry. Well, is it or is it not? Well, let me give you a little history of the Pledge of Allegiance. It was actually written in August of 1892 by Baptist minister Francis Bellamy. It was originally published in the Youth Companion magazine 1 month later on September 8, 1892. And in all actuality, friends, Francis Bellamy hoped that his pledge that he had penned would not just be used by the United States. It could be used by the citizens of any country. And so in its original form, it read like this: I pledge allegiance to my flag and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. And that was the first Pledge of Allegiance. However, in 1923, the words, the flag of the United States of America, were added to the pledge. So at that time, it read, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. But in 1954, in response to the communist threat at the time, President Dwight D. Eisenhower encouraged Congress to add the words under God, creating the now famous 31-word pledge that we say today. So the pledge now reads, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. And by the way, Section 4 of the flag code states that the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag should be rendered by standing at attention, facing the flag, with the right hand over the heart. When not in uniform, men should remove any non-religious headdress with their right hand and hold it at the left shoulder, the hand being over the heart, and persons in uniform should remain silent, face the flag, and render the military salute. So Gary, not only is standing for our nation's anthem under attack, in some quarters, even within the Christian community, as I've stated, the pledge to the flag is now deemed not just unnecessary, but also idolatry. We know that there are atheist groups that claim that. There's some members of the Amish that claim that, you know, they don't want to say the pledge and they've resisted saying the pledge. But is, Gary, in any realm, is there any possibility that reciting the Pledge of Allegiance is idolatry? Your thoughts?
Well, no, it's not idolatry at all. When we pledge allegiance to the flag, we are not worshiping the flag. We're not worshiping the nation. We are just making a statement that we are going to be committed to the principles for which it stands. And, you know, when we look at the United States of America, going back into our history, we see that this nation was founded upon biblical principles. And so when I stand and pledge allegiance to the flag, I'm not worshiping that flag. I'm not worshiping our nation. I'm just recognizing that God has established this nation, and this nation has been built upon godly principles, and I am making a commitment to doing everything that I can to strengthen this nation and to support those biblical principles. I do want to say just one thing here as a sidebar, well, maybe two things. First of all, that phrase, one nation under God, you know, that was put in by a pastor who lived just within 20 miles from where I'm sitting right now in Huntington, Pennsylvania. And I kind of rejoice over that a Pennsylvanian had a part to play in that. But also one of the things that we need to recognize is that the grammar of that particular pledge does not put a comma after nation. You know, you many times hear people recite it by saying one nation, under God, indivisible. But when you read the official printout of that particular pledge, it's one nation under God. And I think that as Christians, when we say the pledge, we ought to say it that way, one nation under God.
Excellent point, Gary. Sam, you grew up in a home very similar to the ones that Gary and I were reared in. No doubt reciting the pledge was not only a part of your early life, it was never a topic for debate. I mean, it was just assumed, as was the case with me and my upbringing, Gary and his upbringing. We just stood at attention, put our hand over our heart, recited the pledge. It was something, in other words, that was expected. Have you ever thought, in your mind, or have you ever considered that the pledge might be a form of idolatry? And if you've never thought that, why has that never crossed your mind?
Well, Dave, you are right. I grew up in Ohio on a farm out in the country. It was a very patriotic area. And that pledge was never, ever thought to be a form of idolatry. And I trust the Lord when I was seven. I grew up in church, never heard it once preached because it was never viewed that way. As a matter of fact, Dave, I grew up, as many would even right now if they're in church, often saying a pledge to the Christian flag. That would be very odd to have a pledge to a Christian flag and have it idolatry in the same church that we're talking about, not being concerned with idolatry, because the key word for those is that what Gary cited, it's the word for which it stands. That holds within it the key word. A flag is but a representation of something. And therefore, you don't worship that representation. You revere and respect that for which it stands. Now, if that flag is a Hitler swastika, I don't honor what it stands for. But the fact that it's a fabric with some markings on it, that doesn't make what it is. It's what it stands for. And so even as I read that original, My Country, 'Tis of Thee, that last thing, our Father's God, to thee, author of liberty, to thee we sing. You could say, to thee we pledge. Long may our land be bright with freedom's holy light. Protect us by thy might, great God, our King. Dave, that's what our nation stood for. And that's why the flag, being a representation of that, is but a reminder of that which God has given us and of that which then we need to pray that God continues, if in fact we want to continue our freedom and love our freedom.
Sam, great point. In fact, you were reading my mail, because I was going to stress, as I'm going to go back to Gary and ask him actually to reference some of those passages that he cited earlier, just alluded to earlier, that talk about nation and the fact that it's not wrong to have a spirit of nationalism, appropriate love of country, respect for country. But the pledge says, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, which is an oft misunderstood component today in our country. We constantly hear the phrase, we're a democracy, we're a democracy. No, we're not. We're a constitutional republic, and that flag represents that and all that the founders envisioned that this nation could, should, and if appropriately followed their insight, would be for generations to follow. So, Gary, if you could talk a little bit about some of those passages of scripture that you alluded to earlier that speak of a nationalistic spirit and why that is not wrong to have that, and why it is not wrong nor idolatry to pledge allegiance to one's flag, especially when it's the flag of the United States.
Well, for instance, first of all, as we think of this word idolatry, that involves putting something before us and God. And when I pledge allegiance to the flag or sing our national anthem or think of the United States of America, I am in no way, shape, or form putting our flag or our nation before me and God. You know, in the Ten Commandments, back in Exodus chapter 20, the first of the Ten Commandments is, thou shalt have no other gods before me, and thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image. That's commands 1 or 2. When we salute the flag, when we sing the national anthem, when we have a tear in our eye when we think of the United States of America, we are not in any way, shape, or form putting that nation between us and God. And then when we take into consideration this whole idea of nationalism and what it is, I think one of the things that we need to realize, David, is that it's God who established the nations. And you can go way back to Genesis chapter 10 and verse 32, where it says, these are the families of the sons of Noah according to their genealogies by their nations. And out of these nations were separated on the earth after the flood. And then, of course, you can go down to Genesis 17, where God is speaking, and he says, as for me, behold, my covenant is with you, and you will be the father of multitude, many, many nations. And as you read throughout the pages of Scripture, you find that God himself always makes that clear distinction that there are such things as nations in the world. And then, of course, the key passage is, as I mentioned it in the last segment, in Acts chapter 17, verse 27, it speaks of God where it says, who has made of one blood all nations of men for to dwell on all the face of the earth, and hath determined the times before appointed and the bounds of their habitation. You know, without getting into in-depth explanation of these verses, it's God who has established the nations. He's put the people in the nations in which they find themselves, and people have the responsibility to strengthen those nations and be loyal to those nations.
And Gary, the part you did not quote was the last part of that verse from Acts 17, that they might seek the Lord. So God establishes the bounds or the boundaries of nations for this purpose, that men might seek the Lord. And we could go back and talk about the Tower of Babel and how man tried to unify and break down the natural boundaries that God had established. Typically, when that happens, it's an attempt to go against God, not to seek Him. And so national boundaries, nationalism, respect for one's country, love of one's country is not idolatry, nor is saluting or pledging to its flag and what the flag represents.